Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald and Review dated April 19th. We'll begin this portion of our reading with the obituaries. Chad D. Daniels, 43, of Herrick, Illinois, died at 3:10 a.m. Sunday, April 17th, in Shelby Memorial Hospital. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, April 21st, in Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, with Pastor John Curtis officiating. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday and from 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday in the funeral home. Casual attire is requested. Burial will be in Gallagher Chapel Cemetery, Fancher, Illinois. Memorials may be given to the Cancer Care Specialists of Illinois for patient services or the Gary Sinise Foundation for Veterans. Ricky L. Rick Jones, 64, of Mount Zion, died Friday, April 15th. Services 11 a.m. Friday, Murren and Gerbel Funeral Home. Visitation 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday. Burial, Graceland Cemetery. Memorials to the family. Helma M. Kozlowski, 91, of Maroa, Illinois, passed away on Sunday, April 17th, 2016, at St. John's Hospital, Springfield. A service to celebrate Helma's life will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, April 22nd, at Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday. Helma will be laid to rest next to her husband, Leonard, in Macon County Memorial Park Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be directed to Maroa United Methodist Church, Harristown Grade School Music Department, or the Good Samaritan Inn. Donald D. Polin, 79, of Clinton, passed away 6:54 p.m. April 16th at Manor Court in Clinton. Celebration of life services will be 2:30 p.m. Tuesday, April 19th at the Assembly of God Church, Clinton, with Clint Collins officiating. Visitation will be 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. Tuesday at the church. Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be directed to the Donald D. Polin Memorial Fund. Ellen Pauline Rogers, 88, formerly of Decatur, went to be with her Lord and Savior at 4:10 p.m. Saturday, April 16th, at her home in Princeton, Kentucky, surrounded by family members. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, April 21st, at Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel, 4020 North Water Street, Decatur, with visitation from 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, April 20th, at the funeral home. Burial will be at Boiling Springs Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Lourdes Hospice in appreciation for the wonderful care they provided for Mother, which is the part of the obituary written apparently by the children. Phyllis Jean Ross, 81, of Decatur, died 11:30 a.m. Friday, April 15th, in McKinley Court Nursing Home. Phyllis's wishes were to be cremated, and there will not be any services or visitation. Tanzius Logan Funeral Services is assisting the family with these arrangements. Ronald B. Haas Wilson, 82, of Decatur passed away at 2 a.m. Sunday, April 17th, in Palm Terrace Health Facility, Mattoon. In keeping with Ron's wishes, cremation rites will be accorded and private family services will be held. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, is assisting the family with arrangements. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials be made to the Macon County Conservation District Rock Springs Center in his memory. We turn now to an article about Forsyth, and this was written by Chris Lasvardi. A ban on video gambling in Forsyth remains in effect despite recent reconsideration of the issue. The Village Board decided Monday to hold off on changing its 2012 ordinance to permit video gaming machines, at certain types of restaurants. Quote, "We really have a wonderful community," Trustee Bob Grunwald said. "We have been blessed by sales tax revenue. I see no pressure to lower our standards. We're not looking for more revenue." The issue of video gaming was first discussed in January, with the board deciding against making any changes. It was revisited after the owners of a proposed new restaurant approached the board in March about their business plan. Quote, "Gaming is not our main focus," said Nicole Corrington, one of the partners in a sports-themed pizza pub to be built in the former Golf USA location on Barnett Avenue. Quote, "We want to have that. Rent is very high here. We are not a nationwide business." The business would offer entertainment that is not available in Forsyth, including live music, said Jeff Ludwig, another business partner in the Trojan Horse Pizza, Pub, and Sports Restaurant. Among other things, the business, at 2,800 square feet in size, would not have met the proposed requirement for a restaurant to be at least 3,500 square feet in order to be granted a gaming license. Trustee Dave Wendt said larger establishments were being considered for gaming licenses in order to avoid businesses opening that solely are focused on gambling. Many of the residents in the standing room only audience at the board meeting spoke out against the village allowing gambling. They want to maintain an atmosphere favorable to families. The village should focus on attracting a chain grocery store, revitalizing Hickory Point Mall, and developing the Prairie Winds area around the Moroa Forsyth Grade School, said Andrew Crowther, pastor of Forsyth Baptist Church. These are the types of things the village should be working on, Crowther said. I'm concerned about the moral damage that is caused when gambling is introduced into a community. I'm thankful for what has been done to make this a family-friendly community. Trustee Steve Hubbard said after meeting with the owners of the proposed business, he wanted the board to reconsider its position. He said the number of locations that would be allowed to have video gaming could be limited. After discussion, the board did not make a motion to vote on the proposed changes to the ordinance, with the majority of board members indicating they would be against it as written. Let's read what our columnists are saying this morning or this afternoon. First, we turn to Abby or Jean Phillips. Dear Abby, what do I say to people who give me unsolicited parenting advice or scold my daughter in public? I would never interfere with another parent or direct a child who isn't in my care. What gives these people the right to barge into someone else's life in such a way? I have been chastised for letting my daughter sit on the floor while waiting in a long line, letting her be more than 4 feet away from me in the aisles, and allowing her to speak loudly. She's 3. I don't hire a sitter for running errands, and I can't leave her in the car. It's hard enough wrangling an energetic kid while trying to shop, do banking, or send mail without being constantly pestered by strangers. Do you have any thoughts on this? Signed, Mom in Hillsboro, Oregon. Dear Mom, if your child is so disruptive that individuals feel the need to intervene or offer parenting advice, then it's time you took some of it to heart. If she's bored while you're doing errands, bring something along for her to do rather than use her outside voice or run wild in the aisles. Here's a next letter. Dear Abby, prom is less than 3 weeks away, and I'm still looking for the perfect dress. My mom and I went prom dress shopping one time, but everything I liked, she didn't. She told me that if she didn't like the dress, she was not going to purchase it. I tried to tell her this is my prom, and I should like the dress, not her, without sounding mean. She told me I should pick the cheapest dress. Am I wrong for not liking the dresses she likes? How can I get through to her that this is not her prom, but my prom? Signed, Aggravated in Louisiana. Dear Aggravated, when you start buying your own wardrobe, your taste can be the deciding factor. However, when your mom buys it for you, it's important to remember that her budget needs to be considered and try to be gracious about it. As you will discover when you are older, because a dress is expensive, does not guarantee that it's the prettiest or that it will look great on you. And here's one more letter. Dear Abby, Friday, April 22nd is Earth Day. Recycling is so important to our planet's irreplaceable resources. Can you please remind your readers how long it takes items to break down in a landfill? And this is signed, Scott in Texas. Dear Scott, items such as glass bottles and jars, plastic containers, aluminum cans, disposable diapers, and plastic foam cups can take from hundreds to thousands of years or more to decompose. Cigarette butts can take up to 10 years. I encourage interested readers to go online, see the figures, and learn what they can do to reduce, reuse, or recycle. Earth Day offers a chance for all of us to do something positive for the planet. Many parents use it as an opportunity to bond with their children, and some schools offer credit to students who participate. Helping children understand how the garbage they produce impacts their environment is important. So please, readers, do what you can. Dr. Roach's column also includes some fashion advice. Let's listen to this. Dear Dr. Roach, I read your column today about the senior lady who had burning pain in her hips and throbbing in her legs at night. I am a senior who has had those exact same symptoms for many months. I went to the doctor and had x-rays, etc., finally figuring it out myself. It turned out to be those skinny jeans that everyone is wearing that was causing the problem. As soon as I switched to a softer fabric in pants, my symptoms were gone for good. And here's his answer. You are quite right. There is a syndrome that is increasingly recognized, sometimes called skinny jeans neuropathy, where the pants are so tight that they can compress the tibial, peroneal, or lateral femoral cutaneous nerves, leading to pain and tingling in various locations. I found a case report of the muscle being damaged from too tight jeans. I appreciate your writing to help bring attention to this condition. Don't be a fashion victim. And here's one more letter. Dear Dr. Roach, when trying to get vitamin D from sunshine, is it beneficial to get the sun rays through window glass? Signed, VM. Answer. No, the window glass absorbs the ultraviolet B radiation necessary for efficient conversion of its precursor into the active form. The amount of time needed to synthesize vitamin D through the skin varies with skin color, latitude, and time of year. For example, a light-skinned person in Miami in the summer needs only 6 minutes of direct sun exposure to get adequate, that is 1,000 IU, vitamin D. It would take 15 minutes in winter. In a Boston winter, it takes 2 hours for a brown-skinned person to make adequate vitamin D, and very dark-skinned people cannot make adequate vitamin D in winter in latitudes as far north as Boston. They must rely on food, such as salmon, or supplements to prevent low vitamin D levels. There are a few short articles about other local news. This one is headlined, Man Allegedly Chokes, Throws Teen. Police allege a man who claimed the 15-year-old son of his fiancée was disrespectful and attacked him, retaliated by choking the boy and hurling him repeatedly against a living room wall. Sworn statements say officers arrived at the boy's home Sunday afternoon and found him with red marks bracketing his neck and other marks on his body resembling those from an assault. Witnesses outside the home told police they heard the boy, quote, yelling for help. The 42-year-old suspect said he had been attacked by the boy with an ashtray. He said the boy had attacked him after he had taken a cell phone away. He denied hitting and choking him. The suspect was jailed on charges of aggravated domestic battery and committing domestic battery while having a prior conviction for the same offense. In other news from Decatur, Festival of Spring set for Saturday. The Macon County Conservation District and Decatur Audubon Society will hold its 35th annual Festival of Spring and Sangamon River Cleanup from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, April 23rd at Rock Springs Conservation Area. The festival is free and open to all ages with a fee for the canoe rodeo of $2 per person and food. Proceeds from the food concession stand support the Rock Springs Ground Squirrels Vintage Baseball Team. For a schedule of a Festival of Spring activities, there is a website you can go to at MaconCountyConservation.org. Also in Decatur, meeting to focus on underage drinking. A town hall meeting on underage drinking will be held 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, April 21st in Main Street Church of the Living God, 2000 North Main Street. Decatur Drug-Free Community Coalition and Decatur Community Partnership will discuss preventing youth drinking. For information, call Decatur Community Partnership at 217-875-7060. A basic computer class will be offered from 9 a.m. to noon beginning Monday, April 25th at the Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corporation on Marietta Street. We'll continue with the briefs from page 3. This is from Oriana. Police checked the welfare of a driver asleep at the wheel on a rural road near Oriana and claim he was drunk and carrying dozens of prescription pills because he is a dealer. Macon County Sheriff's deputies arrested the 21-year-old suspect Saturday morning after waking him up on East Illiniwik Road. Sworn statements say the deputies found a bottle stuffed with more than 90 alprazolam, Xanax, and clonazepam pills. They allege messages on the subject's cell phone centered on his, quote, ability to deliver, quote, the pills to customers. The suspect was booked on charges of being a drug dealer and drug possession. Next has to do with a fake $100 bill. This is from Decatur. A Decatur man who allegedly tried to pay at a gas station with a forged $100 bill was arrested early Saturday morning and jailed on a charge of forgery. Police were alerted just after midnight when a clerk at the Circle K station at 1089 West Eldorado Street said she had been handed the currency by the 33-year-old suspect. Sworn statements say the bill failed a forgery test and the suspect tried to take it back, but the clerk refused. Patrol officers had traced the man's vehicle within an hour and he was arrested. He told officers he didn't believe the bill was a fake. This is also from Decatur. Police arrested a Decatur man Saturday who is accused of repeatedly punching his girlfriend in front of her crying children. Sworn police statements say the attack had happened March 20th at a residence the suspect, 34, shares with his 26-year-old girlfriend of 7 months. She told officers he came home that night, accused her of seeing other men, and then grabbed her by the neck before punching her several times in the side of her head. The victim's children were crying, allegedly prompting him to scream at them before striking a door, flipping a couch over, and storming out. The suspect was jailed on charges of committing domestic battery while having a prior conviction for domestic battery. Our next article is Dateline Mount Zion. Headline, Mount Zion OKs budget covering 8 months of 2016. The village of Mount Zion will live with an 8-month budget as it switches to a new fiscal year schedule. The village board unanimously approved a $2.3 million spending plan on Monday that would run from May 1st until the end of the year. After discussion during its past meeting on the tentative budget, the board approved the plan without further discussion and with just one resident speaking during a public hearing. The budget has no notable changes from last year, with Village Administrator Julie Miller referring to it as a status quo plan to get Mount Zion through December. At that point, the board will work on another budget that will run the 2017 calendar year. Until now, the village had prepared a budget in the spring for a fiscal year that runs from May 1st to April 30th. However, the village is required to set up its tax levy in the late fall, months before budget discussions begin in earnest. That chicken before the egg situation is what Miller hopes can be addressed with the change in when the fiscal year runs. This is a quote. You're collecting this pool of money and then you're figuring out how to spend that money, she said. I feel like you should be planning on how you're going to spend that money and then only tax for what we need, not what we think we're going to need. The budget estimates a total of $1.9 million in revenues, with more than half coming as part of the $1.09 million levy approved last December. A part of the budget includes raises of 2% to 3% for the village's 19 full-time non-union employees. While some who attended Monday's meeting groaned upon the approval of salaries, Miller said afterward the raises were possible due to the village's financial stability, as she touted its $1.2 million fund balance reserve and stable revenue estimates. Quote, Mount Zion is not even a microcosm of the national economic picture, she said. The whole base of our tax structure is based on homes and small businesses. We have no real surprises here. And this article was written by Ryan Voiles. There are some interesting highlights in history about today, April 19th. I'll read just a few. For example, in 1966, Bobby Gibb, age 23, became the first woman to run the Boston Marathon at a time when only men were allowed to participate. You can go way back to 1865 and learn that on this date, a funeral was held at the White House for President Abraham Lincoln, assassinated 5 days earlier. In 1912, a special subcommittee of the Senate Commerce Commission opened hearings in New York into the Titanic disaster. In 1935, the Universal Pictures horror film Bride of Frankenstein, starring Boris Karloff with Elsa Lancaster in the title role, had its world premiere in San Francisco. In 1951, General Douglas MacArthur, relieved of his Far East command by President Harry S. Truman, bade farewell in an address to Congress in which he quoted a line from a ballad, "Old soldiers never die, they just fade away." Also on this date in 1989, 47 sailors were killed when a gun turret exploded aboard the USS Iowa in the Caribbean. The Navy initially suspected that a dead crew member had deliberately sparked the blast, but later said there was no proof of that. Also on this day in 1995, a truck bomb destroyed the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, killing 168 people. Bomber Timothy McVeigh was later convicted of federal murder charges and executed. This has been Carol Bond reading with you today the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 19th, 2016. I look forward very much to reading with you again next week.